SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
At the Races, SiriusXM, and just off with Chad Summers. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't get him to commit to a start in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I know Chad a long time. I thought that performance would have him absolutely breathing fire and talking trash, but he's going to be conservative. Johnny D joins us, and Johnny, we went into the weekend Friday looking forward to the first Stronach Pick 5 returning to the scene after a hiatus, and it didn't disappoint. Good morning.
Good morning, Stevie. How are you? Probably licking your wounds from that wonderful Eagle game yesterday. That was something else.
That was right out of kind of an old fashioned Eagle performance. It was pretty hideous.
Yeah. Catching defeat from the jaws of victory once again.
Yeah, that was not good. Not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
Well, we'll move on.
Exactly.
Stronach 5. It livened up my Friday quite a bit. You know, we've got plenty of stuff going on Saturday, and you know what? I'm really kind of glad that they decided to have it on Friday, because Saturday was loaded, man. It was a fun day. I think you alluded to it earlier in the show. This weekend was a really good weekend for racing. You know, some top-notch horses were in action. Some of them showed up, some of them didn't, and that's the way the game goes. And you know, If the stars win every time out, it gets a little boring. So once in a while, if one throws in a flat performance, it's more interesting. And then you start to look for where the upset came from. But as far as the Stronach 5, nice payout, almost 10,000 for a buck, thanks to that low 12% takeout. It really does affect the payoff. And the sequence, as you alluded to earlier, wasn't impossible, but it was extremely challenging. There were many ways to go, and, you know, when it's over, you think, yeah, I could have had that if I'd have done this instead of that. What was most difficult, I thought, was finding a single or any single that you really believed in. The most obvious single was in the last race at Gulfstream Park, the 10 horse. I can't remember the horse's name.
Soldier's Pride.
Soldier's Pride. That was the most logical single on paper. However, if you saw the race, Soldier's Pride not only didn't win his race before the Stronach 5 race, not only didn't win, but blew second place late. And to me, that was very discouraging. And that's not the kind of single I want to have. That's not someone you want to hang your hat on. But what was difficult was finding another one. And I give you credit. You pointed out the possibility of Bay of Rocks in the first-time Lasix two-year-old running in Laurel in the first leg. As a possible single, and that actually worked out perfectly. I assume you swung and missed somewhere else in the card because you're not you're not crowing today, and I'm not crowing either.
I had a handle on everybody. The horse that ended up the horse that ended up beating me was Impecunious, who I talked about on either Thursday or Friday, who it was one of those horses you were going to make a decision about from a pace standpoint, because he certainly looked on paper like he had potential to be loose. And then it's one thing, you know, it would have been one thing had he gotten loose and been on an isolated lead, but that's not what happened. He went out and he set the pace and finished strong. I mean, they went fast. They went 22 and 45, and yet he kept going. And Baco Sweets, who was one of the ones that you would have used, and Snow Cloud, and Deb's Wild Card. I mean, those were all the right horses. I got suckered in. I thought I was being clever with that Shypen. I thought was interesting. And so I ended up making Impecunious, in fact, on the final ticket, he wasn't even a C. He was like an also consideration. But this is the way I think you do have to approach this bet, Johnny, is you've got to consider every scenario. And I said the other day, I said Impecunious, you know, had the potential, you know, to be out there and wire that field. And I was surprised at the way in which he did it. She did.
Yeah. And I had written on my form, I had the big S next Steve. To her name, yeah. And the yeah. only S on my page, and I wrote, my note was, take him as far as she can. And she did. She took them all the way around. And that really was, I think the upset for many people. Even though Streak of Luck at Santa Anita actually paid a dollar more, paid $17, and Impecunious paid $16, Streak of Luck, you know, all you had to do was kind of accept the cowbred racing, now moving to open racing. But she, on her form, she certainly showed the kind of ability. She was good enough to win that race. It was just a matter of if you're doing nuts and bolts handicapping, and you're looking at state-bred races, now going into an open race and, you know, tougher horses, you had to accept that because of her guts. I mean, she's a fighter. And there weren't a lot of fighters in that race. And that's kind of, I think, where the separation came about in that race. So, again, I think both of these races are two really good examples of what made this Stronach 5 so difficult, so challenging, was that you couldn't really zero in on it. You had to find somebody to zero in on. If you were right, you got paid. And if you're wrong, you tore them up. And, even in the final leg at Gulfstream, if you weren't sold on the 10 as a single, we would look around and say, well, who else? And I think SS Illuminati was a very palatable alternative. Second alternative, as a matter of fact. So that wasn't ridiculously hard. Impecunious, you just had to, you know, as you say, it was there. It was playable. The only speed in the race, and she loves Golden Gate. I think she's now 5 for 8. At Golden Gate. What else do you need to put a horse like that on your ticket? Field Trip, again, that race at Gulfstream, the eighth at Gulfstream, was a little tricky. Field Trip's excellence was over sloppy tracks. And you had to kind of say, well, you know, I think Field Trip's going to, you know, carry that form over to the fast track. And if you did that, that was a possible single, because Field Trip was so much faster than, had run so much faster than everyone else in the race in his last two races. So you could have done, I think you could have done that. I think had I done that, I think I would have had a shot at hitting it. But anyway, great payoff, very entertaining. I'm looking forward to doing it again this Friday. And the pool, I think it was around almost 160,000, maybe.
Yeah, 157.
Yeah. So that's a good start. And I thought it was entertaining. It, you know, I read some comments, people complaining about having to handicap different tracks and that they don't know the different tracks. And I thought, well, yes, that's a, you know, that's a valid, you know, it's a valid criticism. And it's enough to keep some people from playing the wager. But I encourage you to try and fight through that, because the advantage you have is that all the other handicappers are in the same boat. There probably are very few players out there who play Laurel, Golden Gate, Santa Anita, Gulfstream on a regular day-to-day basis. It's an interesting combination if you do play those tracks on a daily basis. So if you're playing it, the Stronach 5, you know, think about your competition is also in the same boat. And some suggestions, you know, find out who the top jocks are at the track if you're not familiar with it. Find out who the top trainers are. And I think basically, Steve, if you look this weekend, it was good, solid, nuts and bolts. It was handicapping. It really was. The Golden Gate race, you had a lone speed filly who's 4 for 7 over the surface, synthetic surface. Okay, you had a Jonathan Wong had just claimed one, and he's like 30% off the claim. So, okay, you know, you've got to pay attention to that. Yeah, there, you could have. It wasn't like you look at it and you say, how the heck did this happen?
Yeah, agreed. And, of course, there may be weeks that that is what we say. How did that happen? But it wasn't here. And to go back to the opener for a second, for the Laurel race that got things going, Bay of Rocks, big congratulations. Not only did it kick off the return of the Stronach 5, it also will be remembered in the Smith family, Hammy Smith's son, Jason, that's his first winner. He had sent out a handful, I think three horses going into the race, and he owns the winner, Bay of Rocks, he owns with his mother, and I'm sure Hammy and Joanne Smith delighted for that on Friday. So congratulations, Jason Smith.
You know, this weekend there was some interesting... The John Henry at Santa Anita. When was that? It was last night, right?
Yeah.
It was yesterday. Yeah, and the winner, I think you mentioned already, Mike McCarthy trained the winner. Liam Bay?
Liam the Charmer.
Liam the Charmer, okay. Liam the Charmer, when they hit the wire, Michael Rona commenting about Ron and Debbie McAnally as the breeders of Liam the Charmer, and the groom was the groom of John Henry. And if you're just watching the race and you're not really buried in it, you kind of wonder, like, why is he spouting off about all this? Well, obviously, it's the connection to John Henry. I mean, Ron McAnally training John Henry out in California or across the country for many of his big wins, and his groom apparently is also the groom for Liam the Charmer, John Henry's former groom, and I believe that was him in the winner's circle after the race. So that was kind of neat too. And of course the Uriah St. Louis victory, that was kind of fun. So It was a great weekend, because you had some of the old stuff happening, like Baffert winning a 2-year-old stake at Santa Anita, Baffert winning with Val Dori at Santa Anita. But then you also had, you know, like a guy like, Chad Summers, a new face, Michael McCarthy, a new face. You had the connections of winning horses that, you know, this game is about horses. It's horse racing, but it's also about people. And I remember when I was in college and I'd gone to Hollywood Park, and through some friends, I had got I was able to go up into the placing judges booth at Hollywood Park, and I was standing there with Sheila Goudreau, who was a steward, ended up being a steward at Hollywood Park. And she said something to me that stuck with me a long time. And I said, well, you know, I obviously asked the obvious question. You guys aren't allowed to bet on the races. She said, no, we're not. She said, but when you've been around the game for a while and you get to know the people, she said, the stories behind what happens here are as interesting as betting on them. And that kind of stuck with me. I never found that to be the case. I was stuck with betting on them. But the stories behind what happens on the racetrack, if you could dig down, you know, below the surface, and yeah, I know you know this because you just mentioned one. I had no idea. Hampton Smith's son and his mom bred. I had no idea. But here you are on the horse. Here you were just showed something to me that I didn't know. The stories are there, and it's why some of the greatest sports writers in our time always loved racing. Grantland Rice is one of them. Because the stories behind the horses aren't great interviews. So it's best to dig a little deeper. And the people behind the horses are extremely interesting.
No doubt. And that story, and when we talk to Michael McCarthy, I'm sure he'll give you more of the details. Jose Mercado is the groom, and even the trophy presentation I saw last night where Jay Pribman communicated in that winner's circle scene. Donna Senecola, Louis Senecola's widow, and yes. Senecola had been the exercise rider of John Henry. And wait a minute, how about Jimmy Jerkins sending out yesterday rocketry to win the Temperance Hill, which is the closest thing we have to the Lawrence Realization these days. And of course, all he does is go out and break the 98-year-old track record of Man of War. I mean, the history just was dripping all over the place over the weekend in a lot of different ways. And yeah, that one, that's a very famous one. Man of War, that was near the end of his career. And when he won that Lawrence Realization by 100 lengths over, he's got a very famous name. Oh my God. How can I, not which one? Not Hemlock. Oh, for goodness sakes.
It'll come to you, Steve.
That's a two horse race. Otherwise, it would have been a walkover. But he won by 100 lengths, and I know some people have said it's sad that to see Man of War's record go by the wayside. But you know what? That's records are meant to be broken. It's about time, exactly. 98. And Jimmy, it's funny because Jimmy said, oh, they probably have only run it, a handful of times. But actually, the mile and 5/8, which was the distance for a long time of the Lawrence Realization. And in fact, Kelso won it in 1960. And his time was actually the same, the 2 minutes, 40 seconds, and 4/5. So he actually, the win yesterday by rocketry knocks Kelso out of that record as well, because he had matched that time.
You know, you mentioned Donna Senecola, Louis Senecola's wife, and Louis was the exercise writer for John Henry, and it really was an adventure when John Henry would go to the track. He would stop. McAnally's barn was at the end of that long road from the gap all the way If you come to the gap, if you're looking to the right side and you go all the way up that right, you take a right at the gap and you go all the way up that road. McAnally's Barn was at the top of that road, and it would take. I'm not going to exaggerate. I'm going to say 10 to 15 minutes for John Henry to go from the barn to the racetrack, because he would walk along maybe 20, 30 feet, and he would stop, and he would look around, and he would stand there, and just stand there, and look, and look, and look, and then he'd walk a little further, and then he'd stop again, and he'd get to the gap, and he'd stand there, and he'd just watch the horses coming off. And Lou set a coal on his back, and Lou would say, "Okay, Big Poppy, you do what you want to do." And they would just let John be John. And at that stage of his career, he had earned the right to do whatever he wanted to do. And there was Louie would just sit there, you know, sit on his back and just wait, you know. People would walk by. I mean, you can imagine how many people would walk by, and they'd say hello to Big John, and they'd say, you know, "What are you doing, Louie? You get paid by the hour? What are you doing here?" But, you know, with a normal horse, it'd be like, "Let's go, you know, come on, we got more to get out." But Big John had earned that right, and everyone knew who he was, and everyone knew Louie, of course, and that was just the way he went about things. It was something.
Yeah, and a lot of horses, this all gets to barn management, and, you know, not every trainer and every outfit can devote, you know, an inordinate amount of time to each horse, but there are occasions that it pays off, and especially with horses, you know, typically, you know, that are a little bit older, a lot of times geldings, and they're getting bored. Some get sour, and when that happens, you have to be open to, you know, letting the exercise rider and telling him, you know, let him do what he wants. I can give you an example, famously. Mies Approval and Carla Wolfson would get on him, and he didn't want to train. And if he didn't want to train, and if he wouldn't enter the track at Calder, Carla would just give him his head and let him walk wherever he wanted to walk. And she did that at times for, you know, for a couple of weeks. And then there was some morning that, you know, he said, okay, and he turned into the gap and went ahead and trained. You have to be willing to do that. We had been looking up at the picture of Pretension, who we claimed, and Pretension was a wonderful New York bred gelding that I remember Chris Grove had, and later in his career we claimed him at Saratoga, and he was tough. I mean, he wasn't tough to be around, but he was tough to train. And there were mornings that he didn't want to train. And Gary told the exercise rider, "That's all right. If he doesn't want to go on the track, just, you know, let him just stand with him wherever he wants to go." And 2 weeks of that, basically. And then one morning he went in the gap and started to train. We won at Belmont with him weeks later. And you got to be open to that.
Well, you know, we hear so many trainers. Well, you know, what are you going to do with this horse now? You know, they win. Well, we're going to keep him happy. Well, what are you doing with this? Oh, we're just keeping him happy. I want to keep him happy. Yeah, that's kind of, they're not kidding. But part of keeping him happy is, and we touched on this last week, is finding out their idiosyncrasies, solving their idiosyncrasies, and allowing them to do enough to where they're happy. But, as you touched on briefly, there's a limit. You know, you can't allow a horse to just do whatever he wants. There's a limit. And within that limit, you may have to stretch your. It's like a coach with a superstar athlete. You know, you've got to keep them happy. That's part of your job as a coach, not only to teach them how to play, but also to keep them happy. And there's a limit to what you can do to keep them happy. I mean, if he wants to not show up for practice, well, you can't allow that. But if he wants to...
Allen Iverson.
Know, wear, yeah, well, practice. We're talking practice. You know, T.O. was like that. And there's so many of them. You can name so many of them that, you know... And my favorite one is they asked Jimmy Johnson, the former coach of the Cowboys, they asked him, they said, well, what was your penalty, your punishment for a player who was late to meetings? And he said, who's the player?
That's great.
And I always thought, heck yeah, that's what these guys, what these coaches and managers in baseball, when they're dealing with these high-paid athletes, how do you manage them? How do you adjust? Okay, so with the horses, you can't talk to the horse, but you can let him do to a certain extent, and then you've got to say, no, we're not going there. This is what, keep him happy, but don't spoil him. I guess it's kind of the way to express it. And John Henry was probably the biggest example of that that I've seen. You've heard the stories, and they're all true, about horses who want either a traveling companion, another pony maybe, or another horse, another thoroughbred that people have shipped with stakes horses just to keep them happy, or goats, or... whatever, you know, on the backside there are different kinds of animals, and some horses become friends with the other horses, and that's keeping them happy. I don't know how we got on this topic, but it was a good topic.
It's all right. That's fine. We actually got close to wrapping up, but the one that I also think of, back to Maryland, Dickie Small and Broadbrush, and the things he would do with Broadbrush.
The van ride was Broadbrush.
Yeah, you'd have to put him. Yeah, you'd put him on the van, even if you were racing right there at Pimlico, or you had to put him on the van and drive him around for 45 minutes and make him think he was going somewhere, because he loved the van. He loved ride, and some horses you can't get on a van. He was only happy if he had a chance to ride in the van.
Too much.
It's the best.
But again, I'm going to tell you. But again, I'm going to say, you know, we started off talking about the Stronach 5, and so we've added, okay, another wager now on Friday that I chased pretty good. I went after it. I wanted to hit it. I missed. And then Saturday, what did we have Saturday? We had the
carryover.
The
New York.
The carryover at Belmont, and of course I went after that. Will and I. Shared a ticket on that. And you know who we missed? the Versify.
Yeah.
You know, and I
yep.
and I texted him before the race. You know, I texted him. I said, you know, we're single to the top, one of the top handicap horses in the country. What could go wrong? I mean, you almost feel like he's going to lose. But, of course, he gets beat. And then we have the last winner. And, again, in the last race, we also had the favorite who ended up – we got scratched into the favorite who finished second. And we would have had, you know, five twice who finished third, actually. I mean, if we finished second. And that was a strange finish.
Yeah.
Trying to remember. Oh, Lion and Wait.
Lion and Wait.
Ferdinanda.
Yeah,
Ferdinanda. Edgar Prado was on Ferdinanda. Looks like went by Lion and Wait and seemed a sure winner. And then in the final stride, Lion and Wait just comes back on and nails Ferdinanda. And at first I was a little bit like, I thought Edgar maybe had gone to sleep. But then I watched the replay on the head-on. You could see he was hitting left-handed, you know, and got the lead. And I think, not that he went to sleep, but I think he thought he had it, and he didn't. Give Lyon and Wheat and Louis Sive some credit, too, for coming back. Anyway, but so that happens, and we lose the six there, and then I can't hit the early pick five or the late pick five or anything. And so we got losing day Friday, losing day Saturday, and come down to the last race Saturday night. I just finished dinner, and I'm sitting on the couch, and I look at the last race in Santa Anita, and I say, oh, look at this horse. And I hit Travis at 44.40, have win and place, and I'm even for the weekend. This game is nuts.
No, there's nothing like it. I didn't. Good job on Trevisa, because it was too late anyway, because I didn't have her on the multi tickets, but I was live to Hey Negrita and Miss Bad Behavior and even that Spiced Perfection. So I ran second, third, and fourth in there, and
I think I got knocked out on the DQ.
Which DQ? The DQ that was the day before. That was on Friday. The DQ.
Friday was the rail DQ or the other DQ?
Friday was the
DQs at Santa Anita.
Friday was the rail DQ.
Yeah, that one knocked me out, and I kind of was like, yeah,
that was okay. Preposterous. That was an insult to the jockey proficiency everywhere.
I have to tell you, and I've said it to you before. These inquiries, these disqualifications, I don't know what's going to happen anymore. I've been watching the game for 40 plus years. I can't tell anymore. So I don't even worry about it. Sometimes you get taken down. Sometimes you get put up. I can't figure it out anymore. So I gave up.
Well, I understand. This one, though, this was there wouldn't have been a trainer in the country that would have been mad at Drayden Van Dyke for doing what he did. So that was silly, Johnny. Got a lot more to look forward to, including Stronach 5 on Friday. We'll talk next week.
All right. Take care. I'll be listening. Don't say anything bad about me.
Johnny D, everybody. 90 in, 90 to come. Uriah St. Louis joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
What's that?
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I wanna be high now.
Wait a minute.
Groovy, groovy, jazzy, funky, pounce, bounce, dance as me. Dip in the melodic sea. Rhythm keeps flowing and trips to MC. Sweet sugar pop, rocks and pop. You don't stop till the sweet beat drops. I show and prove as I stick and move. Vivid poems recited on top of the groove. Smooth, mind, floating like a butterfly. Notes set afloat, sung like a lullaby. Brace yourself as the beat hits ya. Dip, trip, hit, and tease ya.
We're back at the races. Coming back from Johnny's visit and looking forward to a couple of conversations here next half hour. Uriah St. Louis and Jeremiah Englehart is going to join us too. And Maya with the Pilgrim win and Bill Parcells 40 under with an excellent, I mean, just a nice follow-up to his maiden win at the end of the Saratoga meet, the Uncle Mo, and this was Manny Franco's other win. So we'll talk to Maya as well. Got to be excited about 40 unders prospects. And of course, while we wait for Uriah, the follow-up Sunday, the corresponding turf juvenile events, the Pilgrim on Saturday. Then on Sunday, yesterday, the Ms. Grillo and the performance by Newspaper Record, who very much looked like, you know, the filly to contend with, and she was dynamite. The Lope de Vega for Seth Klarman, Arad Ortiz aboard, and will certainly, depending on what we got in Europe, will look to be certainly the North American first choice going toward the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly Turf. Well, for the last couple of years, watching Discreet Lover, particularly in New York, the big races, the grade ones, the standards, and Uriah St. Louis has him ready time and time again. He has acquitted himself beautifully, but then came Saturday, and the breakthrough win, the Grade 1 Jockey Club Gold Cup. Uriah St. Louis joins us. Uriah, congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
What a great story this is. You picked this horse out for $10,000, and he has just been so steady, and he's been such a hard hitter. Dances, all these dances. Describe the feeling on Saturday.
Well, it's undescribable because we went in there thinking we had a chance to win, and we were 15-1 morning line, and looked up on the third board, and he was, at one point, like 49-1. And we decided we bet a few dollars on him, and told Manny, don't do what we did the last time, because he don't like to stay real close. He likes to break, settle himself, and then make a run. And Manny said, yeah, we'll go with that plan because that's how it's been working. And he broke, and they were going suicidal up front. And 22-3, 45 and change, 109 flat. And I seen him start moving. And when he started moving, I said, hopefully we could get up there and pass horses And we started passing him one by one. And when we top of the stretch, I say he had a chance to win. And he got up just at the wire and won. And it's unbelievable. I'm still pinching myself.
You should be. It's just one of those magical storylines. You know, he was coming in a little under $1 million in earnings. This is seventh win. In fact, he's got 7 wins, 7 seconds, 7 thirds in 44 starts.
Right.
Lucky sevens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this horse, he tries every time. From the first day we got him, you know, he started breathing. He breathed good. Then first race he ran, he got beaten about 5-6 lengths, but he had no clue what he was doing. Second race, he should have won, but when a Kathy Lynch horse came out and bounced him, and my jockey came forward, and he didn't do nothing. We took him up to New York and ran him in a maiden special weight with Dalka Moon and a few others, and he got beaten 2¾ lengths, and then that's when we really knew he was real special, because that was a great race at Saratoga. And we came back to pass, and he destroyed the field in his fourth race. He won by 8 lengths. And been just, every year he's been getting better and better and better. And right now he's at his best.
He certainly, you know, you mentioned what transpired in the Woodward, but in the Whitney, I think people may have lost track of that performance, Uriah. He ran a tremendous race. That had been his career best up to that point,
right.
Just eight weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the Whitney, you know what happened. When we all were in the paddock, 5 minutes to post, and that's when the weather turned bad, and they had to hold up the race for 45 minutes. And we walked and walked and walked and walked and walked. And after we got going, he got blocked a little bit, and Manuel Biscuit came out slightly on him in the Whitney. He might have run second, but Manuel Biscuit came out a little bit and intimidated him. And it was a real good race. As I said, in the Woodward, it was 14 horses. And myself, I take the blame, because myself and the jockey, we decided, let's keep him a little closer. And he don't want to do that. And they bang him around in that 14-horse field, and he's like, that's it. But he only got beaten 11 lengths. If anybody looks, he got beaten 11 and a half lengths. So we knew he had a chance to redeem himself. And exactly that's what he did.
Well, and then some. You know, he really has been consistent. You know, you go back from the last 2 years, and you were aggressive. You were aggressive with him from early on. You were not afraid to run him against stakes competition right from the, you know, even as a 3-year-old.
Right. You know, we had some setbacks. He ran good in the Ohio Derby. We should have gone to the Haskell. We was invited, but we didn't go to the Oscar. We ended up going to Indiana. And he got pushed around in that race. I think then we came back, we won in the Smarty Jones. And in the Smarty Jones, we didn't have a good trip. The Pennsylvania Derby, we lost the shoe. So, you know, we had a few mishaps, but he was trying all the time. And he never came back, you know. Or messed up or anything. He just came back and was always trying to do the right thing. So that's all we could have done.
Well, it all came together. You know, he was fourth in the Metropolitan. That might be forgotten. Third in the Suburban. You had won the Excelsior back in April. And
right.
it just shows you how versatile he is, too, because one turn mile, two turn races, different distances, different configurations, and you know, he really adjusts to almost anything. And we can't have this conversation, to be honest, Uriah, without talking about Jose Flores and the tragedy. You know, Tony Black is on with me every week, Uriah, and you know, knowing what everybody went through in Philadelphia back in March, you know, for you to then come to New York, his first start, literally, what, 10 days, a week and a half later or so? and win, that had to be, I mean, just so emotional and so special.
It was tough because Ozzy wrote him 3 days before he died.
Yeah.
Three days. Up and feet up. Rosa wrote him three days before in Arlington, Maryland, and he got beaten a few lengths, and Rosa was saying we're going to have a good year with him, and then 3 days later he died. That was really, really tough, and we just kept trying. I mean, Jose is on his back. Every time this horse runs, Jose is on his back. You know, the jockey and Jose is riding him, because sometimes I say, he don't have a chance, you know, the way it all time back he is, but he, every time he puts in that kick and he runs hard as he could. And Jose was very special to us. He rode most of my horses. So I always have him in mind and in thought. His wife Joanne and his son, you know, it's one of those things that you don't want to happen, but in this business, it could always happen.
Yep. Well, in this business too, stories like yours happen, and you know, Dave Grenig wrote about you at the beginning of August before the Whitney. It's such a fun story, growing up in New York, and as part of your track team practice, you running a little extra out of your way to Aqueduct to get a couple of bets in.
Mm-hmm. I used to go to East New York Vocational Technical High School, and we finished about 2:12, and you see, a whole bunch of us run up to Aqueduct, bet the late double, and we run back to class, or run back to school to practice. I was on the track team, so we ran back to school to practice. It's unbelievable. I mean, I grew up in New York, and come on. Yes, so it's one of them situations that, it came at the end, because I watched the Jockey Club Gold Cup so many times. I watched the Whitney, the Woodward. I loved the horse named Fogo. And I used to always go and see Fogo run. She had us the secretary, and to end up winning one of those races that those horses compete in, it's unbelievable.
And now you've won yourself a Jockey Club Gold Cup. This horse, when you picked him out, you got him at Timonium.
Right.
And in the two-year-old sale, what did you like about him? Because, Repent, even at that point, Repent, his career as a stallion was, fairly ordinary. I mean, now this has become his best son.
But then she was a first fill. He was a first fill. And we love buying first fills because you never know what you're going to get. So we love buying first fills. And we just decided take a shot on him. And for $10,000, you can't go wrong. If he just turned out to be a cheap horse, you just say, well, okay, I end up with a cheap horse. But he turned out to be much more than that. And I mean, he has a good disposition. That makes him better because, like right now, I don't know if he was hearing people drilling and doing all kind of stuff in the back because they're fixing the stove. And he's just standing in a corner. He don't jump around. He's smart. You know, when you got other horses jumping around, trying to kill himself, he just stands there. He don't beg for food. He don't do nothing. He's a different type of animal. He knows he's special, you know. In any other person barn, he would just be a horse. In this barn, he's special. It's one of them situations that I will always cherish for the rest of my life.
Well, no doubt about it, as you should, of course. And, you know, the other thing about that, you know, that family that you mentioned, the first foal, the damn discreet chat. She was a discreet cat, and she happens to be a sister of Desert Code, the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint winner. So there was some speed there for him. For him to be so good, though, going a distance of ground, that's a lot of that is training and conditioning. Talk about being based at Philly and training at Parks.
Well, the good thing at Parks is the track right now, they got it deep. And it most of the time it used to be deep. So if you could train at Parks, you could go any place else and run. And the only thing that messed up at Parks is the stable gate, trying to get in the stable gate. But all the rest of stuff is good. I mean, they got to do something about it. I don't know if you've ever been at Parks.
Yes.
I mean, that's the only thing that is messed up at Parks, the stable gate. Other than that, I love the place because you could train your horses, you know. But when you get to the stable gate, it's a real entire story.
It's easier to rob a bank than it is to get on the backstretch at Philly.
That's correct. I mean, you got billionaires coming in and they want to come back. I'm not going to come back because it's impossible to get in on the backside.
It's so true. If your car registration is out of sync, they won't even let you in.
That's it. I mean, the cops come back here. Sometimes they have something going on back here, and the cops try to come back here, and they tell them they can't come back. I mean, I could see the president of the United States coming back here and tell them, no, you can't come in.
No.
That's about the only thing that's bad at PAX. Otherwise, everything else at PAX is unbelievable. You know?
I
like the place. It's good. It's been good to me. You know, it's been good to my family. I have horses in them. You know, you don't have to really move them year round, which is real good.
Yep, that's true.
You have to pick up and move and go. You stay one place all the time. And, I mean, it's a big family. We're a big family. Yeah, we fight, but that's with any family. You know, some people wouldn't get along. But most of the time, everybody tries to get along. And you just look at it.
Well, you've been working at it. And you took a little time off to watch your kids grow up. And then you've come back to it. Mm-hmm. And now you got this horse. What are you going to do? What are your thoughts? I know what you said to Dave on Saturday. What are your thoughts a little bit further out here, 24 more hours? What are you thinking about Breeders' Cup?
If everything goes right, he's going to go there. And that would be his last race because I wouldn't run him no more. They're already complaining I'm running 44 times in his lifetime, which is an average of about 10 races a year. But, you know, you have to deal with everybody. So instead of that, that will be his 41st start. If he wins the Breeders' Cup, he could go out a winner. Second, third, fourth, whatever he finished, he could go out a winner. He win a grade one. So that's what we're going to do. It's not going to, after this race, it's it.
How about that? Well, you got a couple of weeks probably to watch him train and see, mm-hmm. you know, how he responds. You know, he's always mm-hmm. been a horse that's thrived, like you say. He's always been a horse that's thrived on work. So mm-hmm. 5 weeks, the timing is good. And
Very good. Yeah. He got 5 weeks. He don't miss a meal, which is great. I never see this horse see a horse in his feet up. Never saw him see another horse in his feet up. So that will help us tremendously, you know, and as I said, he's easy to train, very easy to train, you know, and if we go down to Kentucky, we'll leave about whenever they tell us we have to be there by, then we will leave and go down and run him.
You'll ship on top of the race.
Right, because I think if we leave, we're going to go, I think the next horse that won the Grade 3, the Vosburgh, he's going to leave. Whatever day he leaves, I'm going to leave the same day, so we could both be on the same truck.
Very nice. You and Louis Carvajal. Very good.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a big, you know, it would be a pretty big invasion from Parks with you and Louis. That's
it, you know?
It's all right. I mean, it's all right.
It's good. I'm glad to see, Parks was on the map, but we put them on the map better by we went into grade one in New York. You know, so And the Jockey Club Gold Cup, I'm so glad to win the 100 running.
That's very cool.
That's tremendous, you know. And
it really is.
I will never forget it. It's stuck in the back of my mind. I mean, I watched the race over and over and over and over all the time.
And you know what? He's gonna, and as for the rest of your life, every time you watch it, he's gonna win. You know, I haven't seen the photographs from the ground, but I took a picture, Uriah, off the TV, and it right before the wire, you can see Christophe Soumillon on Thunder Snow. He turns his head to the right. He's looking at Manny, and he knows he's beat. It's amazing. Well, you know, not only I'm not going to let you go without asking about the other stake horse in the barn. That nice Creative Cause filly, Norma's Charm.
Yes, well, we're going to maybe run her once or twice more, and then we're going to give her some time to grow up. And because I think she could be a nice horse next year, and we give her a chance to grow up. And after she grow up, you know, she'll be good. I got some 2-year-olds that's doing real good, you know, and one fell the other day. Last week, one fell. She was in the race and she fell. She slipped in the mud. She clipped heels and she fell. But she came out good. And we will try to get her ready sometime in November. And we got to have one or two of them that is really, we think, have a good shot. So when he leaves, we'll have others that take his place. They mightn't be as great, but they will take his place.
Well, this one so special as Discreet Lover gets up in an absolute thrilling and unforgettable running of the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and maybe more exciting things to come yet for Uriah St. Louis. Uriah, congratulations again to you and Manny, special for Manny Franco, who had a great day. Wonderful, really a rider that's really propelled himself near the top. We wish you continued success and hope to see you in Kentucky.
Thank you, sir.
Uriah St. Louis, everybody, and Discreet Lover, and I've looked forward to this conversation for a while because this has been, I think, one of those stories that operations of all sizes, owners, they just, it's so nice when something like this happens, and he's done a great job with this horse and maintained him. You know, people thought that he was being run too often or over his head, and all he did was acquit himself well every time and capitalizes on a great opportunity to win the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Let's take a break. Top of the order, the top of the hour here, and next in order, Jeremiah Engelhart. Maya with a big win himself takes the Pilgrim, and we'll head to Churchill with the Coach Parcells and the 40 under victory in the Pilgrim. We'll talk about that next, about Baffert later. Baffert with a bit of a mixed bag. Certainly was expected to win the Zenyatta yesterday, but not with Valdori. We'll see, get an update about Abel Tasman. Baffert speculated that perhaps she might have been coming down with something that has affected some other horses in the barn in that section of their shed row. But Valdori, in the meantime, wins a grade one herself. Invaluable victory for her. And game winner was, I thought, some people weren't impressed, I guess. I saw one guy write, oh, you know, it just was okay. It was pretty good. And by the way, the other conversation we got to have about the juvenile, Kathleen O'Connell. Did anybody happen to notice Well Defined's win in the In Reality? You better take a look if you didn't see that. And we're going to talk to Kathleen, too, because Gil Campbell, for Gil and Marilyn Campbell, a wonderful emergent 2-year-old who had run the fastest 2-year-old route figure in the country for a couple of hours. until game winner, or maybe it was, maybe for 10 minutes, because game winner actually went. That was in what, the fifth race, the fourth or the fifth. So those races might have gone off pretty close, but a 91 buyer for well defined Carlos Montalvo, and I was impressed. If you haven't seen it, take a look. I mean, he's never asked. And just manhandled that field in the in reality. Let's take a break. Hour three, Maya Engelhart joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.